all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information. Good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
All right, welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Tuesday, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day to you. I'm joined by my professional Valentine, Aaron Zommers, back down there in Madison. How are you?
Doing pretty well. It was cool to hear about all the ways to help Ukraine. And I also looked at the website. Apparently, the minimum amount of money they recommend that you have in order to sponsor somebody is $3,000. And you can do it as a group. So that is an achievable goal, a lot less than I was expecting.
Yeah, that's really good to know. And in fact, let me go back and for those folks watching on Facebook, let me put that address up again. It's ukraine.welcome.us/connect. And if you missed it in our last hour, we were talking to Bryce Lechterhand about the work that he and his wife have done to help adopt a Ukrainian family. I shouldn't say adopt, but to facilitate helping them escape the war there and to make a new home in Wisconsin. And you can do the same. Go to that address, ukraine.welcome.us/connect, and learn a bit more about it. Coming up this hour, we will talk to Chad Holmes. We normally do on Tuesdays at 7:50 just to talk about his show out of Bull Falls Radio in Wausau. But we're going to spend a little extra time, get him in here at 7:30 and talk about Wausau issues. And we've mentioned this the past couple of weeks about a proposal to consolidate schools in Wausau, and it's not a small plan. Well, that plan actually got passed by the Wausau School Board last night, and a lot of people not happy about it. Chad will join us to explain, you know, the problems in the district that led to the necessity to discuss this proposal, what it is that's in the proposal, what's in it that people are unhappy about, and then certainly what is the, you know, the plan going forward. And so we'll talk to Chad all about that coming up at the bottom of the hour. We have a question of the week that I wanted to make sure I got to you, and it was about tipping and whether 15% is still a customary tip for good service, or do you usually tip more or less? And you can go to our Facebook page and comment on that, and we may rattle off some of your responses in the days ahead. Wanted to get a quick headline or two in here first, and this first one is more about debunking, you know, some misinformation that's out there, because it's still being shared by right-wing politicians long after it's been debunked. And we're talking about tax time. And folks are starting to work on their taxes right now. And if they haven't heard it already, they're going to be hearing from people that President Biden and the Democrats have unleashed an army of IRS agents. There'll be some 87,000 agents that are coming out and targeting middle-class families. Well, there's some new numbers out about the IRS, came out late last week, that I want to share them to, again, call out that big lie that's being told. Because Republicans have spent the last decade diminishing the Internal Revenue Service, like all essential public services, and it helps with their talking point that government doesn't work, which, you know, government won't work if you don't fund it properly. It only works based on what you give it. I mean, you put gasoline in your car and it runs. If you say, well, times are tough and we can only afford to put tap water in it, it's not going to run. So President Biden and Democrats in the Inflation Reduction Act started properly funding the IRS, and wow, did the Republicans howl. You've heard them screaming about all the new agents coming. It was, to borrow a Biden phrase, malarkey. It was then, it is still, it's been repeatedly fact-checked and called a lie. 87,000 is the total number of new hires expected at the IRS over the next 10 years with the new funding. And the vast majority of those hires will be in customer service, mostly to replace the 52,000 current workers who will be retiring over the next 10 years. Plus update some antiquated equipment and other systems so that customer service gets better. So here's that new number I said I was going to share with you, 88%. That's the amount of customer phone calls the IRS answered during the first weeks of this year's tax season. They answered 88% of customer phone calls. You know what last year's number was? 13%. That's a lot of folks who had to call back over and over to reach somebody, or they just gave up. And how did they feel about the IRS and government overall? They felt that government and the IRS don't work just what Republicans wanted Americans to feel. But it turns out that if you provide the funding to actually take care of the customer, things go better for everyone. And once those new employees are hired, it'll bring IRS staffing levels back to where they were in the early 1990s. You remember before Newt Gingrich and the Republican Revolution and the quarter century that followed tried to shrink government to the point where it can be drowned in the bathtub? You know who didn't get audited over all those years? People whose audits would be long and complex, as auditors have to trace tax avoidance through shell companies and overseas accounts and alleged charitable giving. Fewer auditors means each complex audit takes longer to finish, and so many don't even get started. It's when you properly fund enforcement that you and I, the taxpayers, see the benefits. We don't have to make up the difference from the tax cheats. So keep that 88% figure in mind, and that it was 13% the year before. Biden, Democrats, and the Inflation Reduction Act got that done with zero votes from Republicans who are still telling that lie about 87,000 agents going after middle-class families. It is a lie that they know they have to keep repeating, but it's still not true. You're up north. Our Valentine's Day theme is basically just silly love songs and other things to make you feel good about somebody special on this Valentine's Day. Hope you had a good romantic weekend or a romantic day today. And if there isn't some romance in your life, we hope you make the most of it in your own way. You do you, boo-boo. Coming up on Wednesday, tomorrow, Sarah Godlewski, the former state treasurer, now running a group called Women Win Wisconsin. She will introduce us to Jean Bissell, who's helping women with health options just beyond the border in Illinois, because Republicans here in Wisconsin continue to keep in place an abortion ban written by a bunch of white guys in 1849. So we'll talk about the situation there. On Thursday, our regular weekly discussion with Joe Zepecki about the week in politics. I'm sure there'll be a lot of focus on the budget address that Governor Evers is giving tomorrow night. And of course, at 7:30 on Thursdays, Kristen Lyerly joins us for Hometown Health. And she says we're going to get to meet some folks in Beloit who are doing some air quality monitoring of their own, a very nice way to ensure that, you know, public health is protected there. And on Friday, our usual cast of characters includes Kiev Akil from Courier Newsroom to talk about some of the national headlines of the past week. We'll talk to Dan Schumacher, look ahead to some of the weekend sports. We'll talk to Mark Jacob, a former editor at the Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times, about some of the comings and goings of media coverage over, you know, the goings-on of the past week. And I can already tell you, we're going to have a lot to talk about. I mean, just if you focused on the New York Times alone, and describing Ron DeSantis and other right-wing politicians as quote-unquote family-friendly. Whose definition of family are we talking about here when you're not referring to somebody more appropriately as, you know, say a white supremacist or a bigot, whatever the case may be? A reminder that there are many ways to listen to and watch what we do. Odds are pretty good you're listening to us live on one of the many Civic Media radio stations across Wisconsin. If you're not, you want to know where those stations are, go to civicmedia.us. You might be listening to us as a podcast. You can go to all the usual places, Apple, Spotify, you know, what have you, and you can subscribe to Up North News Radio there. It would be even easier if you went, again, to the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. When you click on shows, every show has a listing of its most recent episodes, and each hour of programming can be listened to as a separate episode of a podcast. And you can listen there on the website or subscribe there as well. And of course, there's the Civic Media app where you can listen live on your phone as you travel along. Reminder here that if you want to reach the show, you can call us at 844-967-2789, or the number up north is 715-388-7155. And our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Folks that are watching the show on Facebook or Twitter know that we've changed our interface, I guess you'd call it. It's much more pleasing, Aaron, I guess. It's got much more for, you know, graphics and things that we can bring up. You get to see our mugs maybe a little less often because we're covering it up with, you know, question of the day and things like that. But so far, so good. I my attention span can almost go to all these places at once.
Yeah. And I mean, it definitely looks great too. And it allows us to share more information with you if you're watching a lot easier because we can implement these things on the fly, like with the website for helping people out in Ukraine. We could just put that on the screen, whereas before we would have had to make some kind of a graphic to share.
And that, yeah, and then just say, go look on our website or go look on social media. Yeah. So, yep. So far, so good with only a couple of bumps so far. There's only one point where we were both looking at each other like, did you kick us off air? Did I kick us off air? What did we do? And what button did we hit? But we're figuring it out and we're getting there, and we appreciate your patience on it. Let's talk sports now at just about 7:20. The Badger men's basketball team will be hosting Michigan tonight, while the Marquette men's basketball team, now ranked number 11 in the country in the AP poll, will host 16th-ranked Xavier tomorrow. The two of them have been in a back-and-forth battle to see which team will stay on top of the Big East Conference. And the Milwaukee Bucks face the Boston Celtics tonight at home in Milwaukee, and they have a 10-game winning streak that they are bringing in to that particular game. Spring training. The camps are open. The camps are open, or at least getting there for teams. Some started yesterday. A few more. Most everybody will have been reported by Thursday. Thursday is the first workout for Brewers pitchers and catchers in Arizona. That first spring training game is just 11 days away on Saturday, February 25th versus the Dodgers. And then the season begins Thursday, March 30th. With 3-day games at Wrigley Field versus the Cubs. If you missed it in the last hour, as we were talking about Governor Tony Evers making his budget proposal public tomorrow, the full thing. He's been putting out bits and pieces of it to kind of generate interest. And so a piece that came out yesterday, late yesterday, I wanted to mention as we're talking about sports as well. And that deals with American Family Field. And it needs some repairs and renovations. And Governor Evers wants to use part of the state surplus to assist with that, which we're not just doing out of the goodness of our hearts. We're not just doing because we're Brewers fans. But in exchange for the assistance, the Brewers have said that if that happens, they will extend their lease at American Family Field in Milwaukee by 13 years, making sure that the Milwaukee Brewers stay in Milwaukee through the year 2043. That's a big deal to be able to keep a team that, you know, in years past, folks had been talking about that there might be contraction or there might be an ownership change, there might be relocation. This way, the Brewers stay at least through the year 2043. What's the price tag on it? $300 million. $300 million out of a surplus, a record surplus of $7 billion. And again, not unprecedented. Public money has been used for plenty of venues in the past. Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee, Lambeau Field renovations, and even what was initially called Miller Park here, which led to one of the most contentious debates in Wisconsin legislative history. And one of my most interesting days in the legislature, obviously many years after that debate, was to hear from the late Mike Ellis, who is a state senator from the Neenah area. And Mike Ellis had been around the legislature for a very long time by the time I came on the scene. And we were sitting in the Senate parlor, which is a fancy name for that room behind the Senate chamber. And it is a nice room, so it does get a fancy name. But we were sitting there while a floor debate was going on about some measure or another. And Mike Ellis loved to tell stories in the parlor. I mean, he liked to tell stories on a bar stool. He liked to tell stories wherever you were, but he had some great stories. And the only reason I'm not sharing the full details of his story about the Miller Park Stadium vote is simply because, being the good little journalist that I am, I haven't yet been able to confirm it from a second source. And I don't ever want Mike Ellis or his friends to have been able to say, oh, I fed Kreitlow a line and he just passed it along. So you'll have to forgive me for leaving some details out. But as he explains it, the debate went on all night because Tommy Thompson, who was governor at the time, he knew he was one vote short. And throughout the night, he was welcoming people into his office, or shall we say demanding that people come to his office to get their arms twisted. And they resisted by and large. And the story that Mike tells that I have to be a bit vague about is simply that he was told that somebody had just changed their vote. And so that he, Ellis, who was the majority leader at the time, should go ahead and bring the Senate out of recess and hold the vote. And I think this was something like 7 a.m. I'd have to go back and look. Anyway, he'd been told that it was, you know, somebody in the Democratic caucus. And he thought, wow, you know, Tommy got one of those Democrats to flip. Well, I guess they can take all the heat for, you know, allowing this stadium to be built with some public funds. And they call the roll. And as Ellis tells the story, it was much to his surprise that it was one of his own Republicans, George Petek, who voted yes and allowed the stadium to go through. And obviously he took a lot of heat. He was bumped from his state Senate seat. But the stadium got built. The Brewers stayed in Milwaukee. And I have long contended back from that day that there ought to be a statue of him outside the stadium as being the legislator who took the heat, bit the bullet, but made sure that a professional sports franchise would stay. And yes, it's a debate that is definitely worth having, is whether there should be any public money. I'm one of those who believes, yes, that some public money should go up. At the same time, no city should ever give in to corporate blackmail. Also, at the same time, I'm going to point out that Milwaukee has school buildings that are ancient and need to be replaced. None of that is removed from the responsibilities of the legislature to do. But in the walking and chewing gum that a state budget is, there are times when you have to look at a separate issue through its own lens and decide if it's a worthy place to make an investment of tax dollars. So I'm telling you that in this state budget, for example, Republicans should do more to aid our schools, to aid our local governments, to protect democracy rather than suppress the right to vote, to protect land and conserve it rather than just turn it over, you know, willy-nilly to any, you know, corporate developer. They should do all these things. Whether they do or not, they decide on each one line by line. And that includes times when Democrats and Republicans don't always agree on what that line should be. The stadium debate was simply one of the more public examples of it. And again, that was decades ago now. In my case, it was the smoking ban, which was, again, not a partisan debate by any means. It was quite the urban-rural divide, actually, with just about every urban legislator saying, of course we need this smoking ban. What's taking so long? Every rural legislator saying, we don't need a smoking ban. That's going to put these small restaurants and bars out of business. And then you had somebody like me, whose district was equally urban and rural because it had half the city of Eau Claire, but then it extended into, you know, Chippewa County, Clark County, Marathon County. And so I was getting it from both sides. And I really mean getting it from both sides. And in the end, what I ended up doing was, while I was in favor of a smoking ban, I wasn't in favor of it taking effect instantly, that let's give some time. If some of these small restaurant and bar owners think that they need to sell the business, give them time to do it. And so we put it in place over a much longer period. I think it was 18 months or something like that. Some people were not happy about it, but it got done. And that's the ultimate thing, is it got done. Whether we're talking about that or building a stadium or anything else that's in a budget, we sometimes make it sound like all things in the legislature and in Congress are cut and dry, but they most certainly are not. There's times when there's a lot of debate behind the scenes, and they can lead to some pretty interesting stories in the parlor or on the bar stool when all is said and done. More coming up right after this. You're Up North.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
I don't know how you can't say the Ronettes don't have one of the most classic love songs ever with Be My Baby. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody. We're joined from Wausau, from Chad Holmes, who's on Bull Falls Radio every day from 2 to 4 and who covers a bevy of high school sports, but sometimes actually has to cover news coming from the school district. In this case, it's pretty big stuff in terms of a school consolidation plan. So Chad very generously volunteered to join us a bit early here. Chad, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
How are you doing?
Doing good.
All right. Good, good, good. Now you were, you weren't at the meeting last night, right? You were covering games, I believe.
Yeah, I did catch the end of it though. I got back home and then they streamed the meeting. So I caught the vote itself, the end of the process. That was another fairly long meeting last night.
Okay. And so ultimately, let's start with the broad strokes from last night first, and then we'll get into details. What did the board decide last night? What was the vote?
It was ultimately the Wausau School Board did approve a plan to restructure starting in the 2025-2026 school year. The motion carried with a 7-2 vote. What they voted on was to merge the high schools. There will now be one 10, 11, and 12th grade senior high school that will be at the current Wausau West, and one 8th and 9th grade junior high at the Wausau East High School that is currently. They'll also transfer to two 5th to 7th grade middle schools at John Muir and Horace Mann. In addition, they've also will be moving to 8 K-4 elementary schools, though that part of the process is going to continue to be needing more board action. They have not been, that's not been finalized yet, but that's what they voted to do. And also there was part of the initial proposal, which would have reallocated some of the funding that was approved in a referendum last April to help create an addition at Wausau West as part of the new high school. And that part of the proposal was delayed. They stripped that from what was passed last night. So that will need further discussion as well. But so that's where they kind of voted yesterday.
No doubt. I mean, because again, even before we get into the details of the plan, prior to this plan, there was this referendum for Wausau West High School. And now, based on the vote that's taken last night, Wausau West High School is going away. They're just going to combine them both at East. And doesn't that have some people wondering?
That's not the case. No, the new high school will be at Wausau West.
Yes. And so East goes away and becomes a grade 8-9 school.
Yes.
So just one high school.
Yeah.
But that's not what people supported in the referendum, right? They voted for that referendum, assuming Wausau was going to keep two high schools.
That was the thought at the time.
Uh-huh. And so
that's one of the problems. I mean, yeah. that's one of the issues.
Yes.
Let me kind of give my quick thoughts and then
yes, please.
Ask questions. I think this is a case of where you have, I think, on the left-hand side and the right-hand side. I don't mean politically. I just mean two hands, one hand and the other hand. I think on one hand, you have a situation where they got through this exceptionally poorly. I think going back to last summer, and I was talking to someone last night after the vote, and that back when I went to my first football practice, back then I hadn't started my show. I had not been going to, I mean, this was just at the transfer to Civic Media. So we were still, getting ready to go. So my hat was still firmly on the sports side. I had heard about these committees. They had committees that were meeting last summer. But the problem was this was done in a very insular way. They did not really start to bring in the general public for quite a long time. And I just think that they fell behind very early and they never got back on track in terms of bringing the public along in this process. By the time the public got into this process was the last couple of major meetings. So I just think that they did not do this in the way that they should. And then even yesterday, as part of their proposal, they blamed the media, said that the media was one of the issues that why people were not behind this at the level that they thought they were, and they still claimed that they were being transparent when even last week a story in the Wausau Pilot came out that said they had not been transparent, that they had had a meeting that was not public. Now, they admitted that was a mistake, and I'll take their word for it, but the idea that this was somehow the media's fault, and I think it's because the Pilot has really been very much on top of this, and maybe not in a cheerleading way, but I think in a pretty straightforward way. And the whole idea of blaming the media for the shortcomings in the process of bringing the public along, I think, was just adding a little fuel to the fire at the very end. But on the other hand, I think that this may have had to have been done. So in the end, maybe this was the right decision. We'll wait and see. I think we're going to have more, as we see, there's going to be more action that's taken over the next weeks and months and probably years. There's questions about the transportation that they say is going to be a two-year process here to figure out. So there's still a lot that's up in the air. But in the end, this could be the right thing to do because based on enrollment figures and trends and a lot of the other aspects that led to the ultimate determination that something needed to be done. So I say that on one hand, it was done in, I think, in a poor way, a poor process of getting people involved. Even the board vice president, when he was making the vote last night, said, "I wish there was more support for this." Well, yes, I think that would be a lot better for any major decision to have the people on board with it. But in the end, it still may be the right thing to do.
Yes, because there are definitely issues. There are definitely concerns. But I did see that Wausau Pilot headline and, again, rolled my eyes really hard because this is where people in certain positions, often political positions, they think that just because they've talked about it a lot and that or that they've been meeting for a long time and that there has even been some coverage of it, that just because they've been talking for a long time means the public is informed about it. When, as you've pointed out on this program previously, there's been no effort to actually sell, I think would be the right word, sell the public on it. In other words, which is nothing more than convince the public you're living up to your responsibilities. We're trusting you to have meetings that don't have everybody from the public there, but that when you finally finish all that work, you're going to let us know why this is the best plan. And they haven't done that, it seems like. And to blame the media is disingenuous at best and lazy at worst. And yet here we sit with circumstances that lead to the need for a plan, declining enrollment, declining state aid. But whether this is the best course of action or not, you can't just say, well, we met a lot and it's on you if you didn't come to all those meetings. I just think that's going to make things even worse with the public, which won't vote on this in a referendum, Chad, but it certainly can come up, at the next, school board election, for example.
Yeah, and I think you kind of hit it on the head because, I had heard about this last summer, but that was not something that was being spread in a very public way that these committees were meeting. There was a committee both for the secondary and then for the primary schools as well. And even just to the last meeting, they announced the meeting and put out the agenda for this meeting on Friday afternoon, just before 3 p.m. You know what that is. That's a Friday afternoon news dump.
That's right.
You know, I mean, right to the very end, the last meeting, did they not know they were going to have this meeting on Monday? Did they, until late Friday afternoon? Did they not have the entire agenda ready until late Friday afternoon? You talk about, you know, bringing people along. Each of these meetings, they kind of brought out, you know, day or two or, you know, a few days beforehand. Well, here's it. Here's 65 pages. I mean, if you went to the agenda page on the WASA school district site, you can go through what the rundown was going to be in terms of what they were talking about. That's where the pilot got the information about blaming the media, because mm-hmm. it was one of the slides, and it went right down the line until you said, okay, we're going to vote on this. So again, right down to the end, it felt like they felt, and I don't blame this all on the school board. I think the administration has been pushing this very much so as well. And in some cases, we saw school board members in the last few meetings ask for other options. And we heard that at previous meetings, and we never really got, I think, any other options.
Well, it was going to lead me to this question, and that is about the makeup of the school board, because, again, from what I understand, in the most recent school board election, or even the two most recent school board elections, that there's been quite a bit of turnover. Some would get into it, whether it's, you know, political or conservative versus progressive or what have you. But my point is more about, you know, when you say the administration, you know, is culpable in this as well, is this a case of, you know, basically saying to new school board members, oh, trust us, we know you're the school board, but we're the administration. We've been doing this for a long time. So just approve this.
I can't say either way. I don't want to speculate in that realm. I don't know if that's
okay. But I think the point stands that this is not just the school board, and it is not just the administration. There were communication problems all around, shall we say. Let me bounce one comment off you that came in through Facebook. Comes from Roger Frost, who wrote, if the two high schools in Wausau combine, this will be the end of the Wisconsin Valley Conference. Merrill has wanted to leave the conference for years. That just leaves five schools in the conference. We haven't really gotten into the sports perspective of it, but I do know that, you know, people have said, hey, is this really about aid? Is this really about, you know, enrollment numbers? Or is this more about, you know, improving their standing in athletics? So whether you want to respond to that or respond to Roger's comment, what's your own take on the impact if this plan is executed as it's written now?
All I will say is, back, like I said, I basically started to learn of this and follow this at the start of the school year, before the school year started, when football practice started. And I would have discussions. And what I can say, and I can say this emphatically, is everything I've been told, this has very little to do with athletics. This has to do with equal opportunity at the two schools. There are a number of different programs that have different levels of access for students at East and West. Everything I've been told is this is not an athletically based move at all. Will there be differences? Yes. I mean, there's pluses and minuses. There are, in some cases, fewer opportunities for varsity athletics. But what they're talking about is more opportunities for clubs and intramurals and, you know, beyond athletics, extracurricular activities, to maybe have more opportunities, because you have a bigger school where you have a larger group of maybe somebody that wants to be involved in a different kind of club or a different kind of intramural than we do at the varsity. Whether or not it kills the Wisconsin Valley Conference, I think that's a little beyond where we stand now.
Sure.
The Wisconsin Valley Conference has shrunk over the years. It was nine teams for many years, and then Rhinelander left, and Antigo left, even Merrill left for football. They're not part of it in the football. They have a football only conference. So yeah, could there be changes? Absolutely. Whether that means the death knell of the WVC, I'm not willing to say that at this point.
Sure. Chad Holmes joins us from Bow Falls Radio in Wausau. And one quick point to make before we take a break here, Chad, and this is just a personal observation from me. When I heard about that, there are some programs at West, but not at East, or this school and not that school, I don't know what was considered or not, but it immediately thought that, from my standpoint, going to elementary and middle school in St. Paul, a large urban school district, you couldn't put programs in every school. And so they were called magnet schools or magnet programs. And rather than busing kids to entirely new schools across town or whatnot, if you wanted to be in that program, then you might take a bus ride over there and, you know, 1 or 2 days a week and take part in that program. It would jumble up schedules a bit, but compared to a 1 hour bus ride every day, maybe it's another matter. So we'll bounce that and more off of Chad Holmes when we come back on the other side of this quick break and look ahead to his own show coming up next. You're Up North. Going to wrap up with little Jackie Wilson for Valentine's Day and some of our favorite love songs. Chad Holmes is with us again from Bull Falls Radio in Wausau. We've been talking primarily about the Wausau School Board voting last night on a major consolidation plan that's going to change where a lot of students go to school and the makeup of the schools and whatnot. And Chad, let's pick it up with transportation, because you know, in the last hour, we talked to Bryce Luchterhand, who had been the Northern representative for Governor Jim Doyle for years. And we got into that notion of, you know, transportation in rural districts compared to, say, you know, a Milwaukee or a Madison, something like that, that it's challenging enough as it is. And now when either through enrollment declines or what have you, you have to extend those bus rides, it gets tough, and parents feel very strongly about it. And I think what I'm hearing here is some of these parents are saying, are you really sure this is the best way to go? Because, you know, my kid a year or 2 years from 2 years from now might be on a much longer bus ride. I'm sure that's been a concern you're hearing about.
Yeah, and that has been. And that's actually interesting, because earlier during the winter, I had to go up to Minocqua to do a basketball game. And the Lakeland School District is the biggest in terms of size. And they have this big map in the area where I walk in and, you know, go up to broadcast. And I look at it and I'm thinking, how long are these bus rides for some of these kids? Mm-hmm. Because it is, you know, a lot of rural area up there. And it's like, you know, it seems like, man, to be on the bus a long time. And that's something you really don't want to do, especially, you know, during the winter months and along those lines. But as part of this, you know, plan, the transportation aspect has been out there. It's been discussed. It was a big factor in the, not this past meeting last night, but the one that was held last month. And from last night, it was, you know, talked about that this is still going to be a process. And that's understandable. I mean, this is, it's going to be changes within the transportation aspect. But the idea that it's going to take maybe over the next 2 years to figure it all out before, you know, some of these changes occur, I imagine people are going to be very much on top of it, because it is going to be very important. And I think this is one area, after some of the issues that the district and the board have had in terms of bringing the folks along, I think they need to be very transparent about these ideas and be very much collaborative with the families and parents. And maybe this is an opportunity to turn the page on maybe what's been a difficult process up to this point and try to make it a little better as we move forward.
Chad Holmes is with us from Bull Falls Radio. I have to take this and go off on a tangent, and forgive me, Chad, but I'm going to cite another podcast, a nationally popular one called Smartless with Sean Hayes, Will Arnett, and Jason Bateman. And I was listening to an episode the other day, and one of them, that of course, you know, grew up in, you know, around Los Angeles, but had a school that they went out to that was like a 2 hour bus ride, because it was out in the hinterlands there. And they actually retrofitted the school buses. The back half of the school buses had desks, and the kids would actually sit at desks, and an instructor would be on there doing lessons. Now, I wouldn't want to necessarily do that on icy Wisconsin roads and what have you, but it just made me think about that with these long bus rides. Are we going to have to somehow adapt so that these 2 hour, you know, these 1 hour bus rides or what have you are a little bit more useful than we are now? We have the technology. Maybe from this problem, you know, some opportunities will present itself, but that's completely me on a tangent. I apologize for that.
No apologies necessary.
We
your name's on the show. You can do what you want to do.
There you go. Well, let's talk about the show with your name on it. You do so much in terms of high school sports. You've been, like you said, on the road. We're getting up on tournament time. What are some of the big headlines up there? This time of year as things really get busy for you.
This is my favorite month of the year, starting tonight, because tonight starts our hockey playoffs. And I've been very lucky over the years because both Wausau West and the girls team, the Central Wisconsin Storm, have been very successful. So it's always fun to be around successful groups. So we start that process, and then we have girls basketball and boys basketball. So this month, I just have so much fun to do it. And actually, it's interesting because the first brackets came out, and it was hockey. And should West do what they're expected to do tonight and Superior do what they're supposed to do tonight, going to have a very long bus ride coming up on Thursday to go up to Superior for a game. And then on Sunday, the girls basketball brackets came out, and I see that there's a potential second round opponent, Superior, on the road again.
Oh boy.
Holy cow. I can't. One trip to Superior. I mean, I did that last year for boys basketball, and it's like, that is a, you're talking about a long bus ride. When you have a bus ride where you have to stop in Rice Lake just to stretch out and have a little shoot around and then get back on the bus and head back and still head off to the game, that's a long trek. So, but I mean, I love the high school sports. And that's why I'm very interested in this school story, because I see these kids. I talk to their parents. I'm around it a lot. I know how much the educational aspect and the extracurricular aspect matters to these people, and I want to underline what I said before. You asked it before the break about the athletic aspect, and I trust the people I've talked to, and these are people involved in athletics who said this is not about athletics. Athletics was going to be one way or the other. It'll always be working out. It's truly about the educational aspects and about the future for this school district. And I just really think it's important to really emphasize that, because I do trust the people that have taught to me, and I truly believe that this is what they're trying to accomplish.
Can I tell you something funny in terms of postseason high school sports? My old TV station in Eau Claire did a story yesterday, and I caught it again early this morning. They are celebrating the 20th anniversary of one of the local teams making it to state. So that's how long it's been since this large school has been to the state high school boys basketball tournament. They didn't win state, but they got to state, and that's what they're marking the anniversary of. I thought, wow, if this isn't the definition of the Bruce Springsteen song Glory Days, I don't know what is. I mean, my wife grew up, in Reidsville, Wisconsin, Manitowoc County, teeny tiny town. But in 1946, this tiny school somehow won the state boys high school basketball tournament, and that banner from 1946 has been hanging in that high school gym forever. But at least it was winning the state tournament that they're talking about for decades afterwards. But this is what you do. This is why you do all the traveling. That's why you lift those weights, Chad, is for this time of year.
Absolutely. And it is so much fun when you get to a packed gym or a packed ice arena, and you feel that excitement with the combination of big student sections and families who have drag their kids from one end of the state to the other. Nowadays, even out of state, I mean, you hear about these travel teams, they go all over the place. So there's a lot invested in it. And, for the most part, people do have the right attitudes about it. You hear about the bad ones once in a while. And mm-hmm. I think we had a clip last week about some fans who were a little rough on the officials. But for the most part, they are really terrific, and it's just an exciting time and a lot of lifetime experiences for these student athletes.
Very much so. Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio. You can hear him weekdays 2 to 4 p.m. Thanks so much for all the background on what's happening up there. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Hey, you too, Pat.
All right, Chad, thanks so much. And that's going to do it for us here. Thank you for being with us on Up North News Radio. Have a wonderful Tuesday, and we'll do this again tomorrow.